You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
Everyone, I just wanted to say hi tonight. Hi.
Thank you, sweetheart.
You're welcome.
I don't know what got in to that little girl. She said, "Poppy, can I say hi to everybody tonight?" And of course, you know I wouldn't say no to her. And so I didn't. Oh, me. This has been a tough day. Trying to get the final articles into the paper. Goes to press on Monday. And Monday, when the new issue, issue number 8, goes to press, issue number 7 will be a back issue. And I don't think we have any left. I really don't. I don't know. I haven't checked with Mike, but last time I was looking at the pile, there was only about 25 papers left in it, and that was a week ago, so I'm sure they're all gone. Issue number 8 is in, I'm still having a little problem with my throat, folks, so bear with me, is another killer. And it's going to open a lot of eyes. And going to acquaint you with a problem that you didn't even know existed. With some people that most of you normally don't even think of. So my advice is don't miss it. If you're not a subscriber, you can order it. $3, the current issue, starting Monday, will be number 8. $3, postpaid. Any back issue is $5 postpaid. And if you would like to subscribe, it's $35 for 24 issues. $35 for 24 issues. And you can make your check or money order payable to Image, I-M-A-G-E, 1216. That's Image 1216. And send your subscription request along with your money order or your check or whatever you're sending to Veritas, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, Post Office Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. Now remember, folks, the ownership has changed. Nothing changes in the paper, and nobody who's working on it has left. Just the ownership has changed. Make checks or money orders payable to Image 1216. If you don't, we'll have to send them back to you. And send them to Veritas, Post Office Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. I got an email the other day from somebody that said, you know, I got a subscription a long time ago, and I paid $55 for my subscription, and now I notice that it's $27. Does this mean I'm going to get a refund? You know, I bought a brand new Ford one time. 3 months later, they were given $1,000 rebates. But Ford never sent me one. And that's your answer. No. Our costs for startup and producing that paper were tremendous. And the fact that we were sending the paper free to everybody in Washington, D.C., every representative, every senator, every member of the cabinet, every agency head, the president and vice president, all get a copy free on us every issue. We had to fix the rates the way they were. And all of you who subscribed at that rate, If you had not done it, there would be no Veritas. So you can take great pride in that. And if you got it at the $27 rate, consider yourself lucky. But it's going to stay at $35 for a while, unless the price of paper and ink or something else goes up. And the reason we had to go from $27 to $35 is because, for any of you who have gone down to purchase paper lately, price of paper has gone way up. And so our printing costs have gone up. And there have been some other costs that we have incurred. Equipment, software, computer problems. And we will adjust our price whenever it's necessary. And whatever price you got your subscription at, the only thing that we guarantee you is that you're going to get what you paid for. The exact number of issues that you paid for. Okay, folks. If you want anything else, go to Cuba. Castro will give you anything he's got for free as long as you show up on Sugar Cane Cutting Day. And he'll love you for it. And he needs to replace a lot of sugar cane cutters and socialists so that he can have somebody to give things to. Because most of them are coming here. I just can't figure it out, you know. People who live in this country, and I'm not even talking about Veritas now, I'm talking about the mobocracycrats, the Democrats, the socialists, the Marxists, the communists, the utopianists, all of these people. It's incredible. Here they are in this country enjoying all the freedoms, and they love it. Don't even listen to their baloney. They love it. If you were to take away one of their liberties, they would cry louder than anybody. Yet, they're trying to propel us into socialism, utopianism, Marxism. They would love to see communism come back. And don't believe that crap about it didn't work. Nothing failed in the Soviet Union. This was created from the top down, not from the bottom up. And the ruble didn't collapse because the ruble was never floated on the international monetary markets. Never. The ruble was worth what they said it was worth. So when they said it was collapsed, they did it for a purpose. It's a great deception, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great, great, grand deception. And whoever thought of it was probably a genius and certainly knows a lot about human nature because most people are buying it. They believe it. But anyway, they're here. And they're trying to create this socialism. And every place where socialism exists, they're trying to run away from it. And I got an idea. I got a brilliant idea, folks. Why don't we just have everybody who's living under socialism come here? And everybody here who loves socialism, go there. Just have a Trade Places Day. I think it would be brilliant. Don't you?
Come, let's stroll. Stroll across the floor.
Can't you just see Schumer with a cane knife in his hand? I love it. I think it's a wonderful idea. The more I think about it, the better I think it is. I think we should promote this. I think we should start calling Washington. Let's have an exchange day. Let's take all the people who don't like America the way it is and want socialism and trade them for all the Cubans and all the other people in the world who don't like socialism, who want to come here and be Americans, and let's make it a one-for-one trade so that it's uneven. You know, but actually that's really unfair. I think one Cuban who wants freedom is worth probably 10 of these scumbag socialists up here who don't like it. Don't you think so? So maybe we ought to trade them 10 of these socialists here for one who wants to live in liberty from wherever they come from. I think it's a good idea. Also, I hear Schumer wants to run for governor of New York. And I think we should promote that just to get him out of the Senate. I really do. I think it's a brilliant idea. I think Schumer should be the government of New York, the governor, which is the government of New York, so it wasn't a slip of the tongue. Anyway, Schumer should be the governor of New York. I think, since New York is mainly made up of socialists anyway, I think they deserve to have Schumer, don't you? Have you ever seen anybody in your life, you look at them and you just know? I mean, you don't have to talk to them. You just look at that man, and you know that he's the slimiest scumbag that's ever walked on the face of this earth. Just looking at him. He's the only one in my whole life I've ever seen who looks that way. And I met some pretty bad people, folks, in my life. But Schumer's the only one that I've ever seen in my whole life who looks it. Who looks it. And not only looks it, is a slime ball. And I'll tell you something else we should do. In fact, I'm going to ask you all to do this. It's another stroke of genius. I want everybody, and I really want you to do this, folks. I'm dead serious. This is not a joke. I want everybody listening to this broadcast to call your congressman tomorrow and tell him, don't you dare make a deal with the president. We don't want the government to bring those people back. Don't you feel safer that all those offices and all those bureaucrats are gone? I feel so much safer now. I took a deep breath tonight and I let it out and just felt so good knowing that those people were not in those offices screwing around with our liberties. Everybody out there, call your senators, call your representatives, call Washington, D.C., call the White House. Tell them you do not want the government to go back into operation. Make sure you do that, folks. Okay? Tell them you want the government to stay shut down, to remain exactly the way it is, right now, this moment. I knew there was something wrong. See, I dropped this book I was holding in my hand, and it hit one of the buttons on the console, and that's why the sound changed all of a sudden. It shut off the whatchamacallit, the equalizer. People who meet me in person say, Bill, you don't even sound like you do on radio at all. And I tell them, no, that's because by the time you hear my voice, it's gone through so much electronic processing that it's really not my voice. By the time it gets through all of this equipment that I'm sitting in front of, through this Comrex over here, goes through two equalizers, a Comrex, a DBX-163X, a SSM-1200, it goes through an amplifier, and gosh, I don't know what all else, and then it goes through a phone line to a satellite uplink, and from that satellite uplink, it's beamed up to Galaxy 6, transponder 14, which a lot of you tune in to with your satellite dish and listen to us. And then WWCR and KDNO, take it down from there and rebroadcast it on shortwave and KDNO FM, which covers about one-third of the whole state of California, the San Joaquin Valley, Sacramento, Fresno, all of those places, Delano, and I don't know what all. And then there, I just learned tonight, I was on another radio show earlier on the Liberty Network, Liberty Radio Network, and I was told by the host of that show, now I'm telling you this because he told me, so you're hearing it about fourthhand, I guess, and I don't even know if it's true. All I know is that he told me that there are about 638 low-power FM broadcasting stations across the country that are rebroadcasting the hour of the time. Can you imagine that? Now, that sort of took me aback. It made me feel pretty humble right then. And I have no idea if it's really true or not. I know that there are some FM low-power stations that are rebroadcasting this show. And I also know from traveling across the country on my speaking engagements and my lecture tours and things like that, we have been going through the car radio and have heard this broadcast on stations that we didn't even know who they were when we were traveling. And anybody can do that because I have given blanket permission over the years to anybody who wants to rebroadcast the hour of the time. They don't have to call and ask permission. You don't have to get my signature on anything. All you have to do is not edit the broadcast in any way, shape, or form. If you want to run a commercial, run it when I play music. That's the way it works. But you cannot cut up the show. You cannot edit it. You cannot break in and run commercials, anything like that. The show must be run as is in its entirety. You can run commercials, but only where I play music. You cannot cut out my commercial. Those are the only terms. And I guess enough people have heard that they've taken me up on it and are doing it. Also, folks, you should be encouraging your local radio station. You should be calling them every day to get this broadcast on the air in your area. Now, I'm telling you right now, once they hear this broadcast, they probably won't want to run it. But it doesn't hurt to try because you never know who will run it and who won't. And from what I hear on some of these stations, they'd be a lot better off if they did run this show instead of some of the things that they are running, because they got to be dying on the vine. I mean, who in the world could be listening to that crap? You know, I can understand why Rush makes a lot of money. He's a hell of a good entertainer. When I travel, I listen to Rush because he makes me laugh when I'm driving. But I'm not dumb enough to take him seriously, you see, because he's said many times, he's come right out on the air and said it. He said, I do this for entertainment purposes. So I'm an entertainer. And one memorable day, I heard him say this with my own ears. He said, folks, I'm in this because I'm an entertainer. This is all about ratings, folks. And if I thought for one moment that I could get higher ratings by switching to the liberal point of view, I would start tomorrow. That's what he said. So he may tell you that he's sitting on half his brain, but he knows what he's doing. It's you people that don't know what you're doing. When you listen to him and take him seriously and really believe that you have a conservative voice in media that really have your best interests at heart. Rush Limbaugh has his own interest at heart and his own politics. And he will not touch the real issues or identify the real enemy in a million years. And that's the truth. I like the guy. He's honest. It's the dishonest ones that I don't like. The Hegelian dialectic dudes that lie to you and keep you spinning around chasing your tail. Rush is honest. He tells you the truth, and you don't believe him. The other ones tell you lies, and you just suck them up like crazy. It is amazing. It is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. And if it wasn't so serious, I would be laughing, rolling on the floor 90% of the time. Just watching the stupidity of the sheeple. Because it's really a big circus. The only thing that makes it not funny is I know what the results of this stupidity is going to bring to these people. And that makes it tragic. Tragic. Well, I told you we'd continue. And we will.
I'll be alone each and every night. While you're away, don't forget to write. See you.
Just a little more set the mood music, ladies and gentlemen, because what I'm relating to you happened back in the time when all of this was going on, all of this music. And most of us were either in high school or just got out of high school or something. Those my age I'm talking about. Some of you don't know anything about what I'm talking about, except maybe you read about it in a history book, or somebody told you about it, or you saw a movie about it, or a documentary or something. And that's too bad, because those were exciting days. Well, where we left off last night, old Alan Shepard went up and didn't see any stars. Right stuff. And then Virgil Grissom went up and he didn't see any stars either. He too was star blind. That's 2 out of 2, and I figure the odds against that would be pushing about 10,000 to 1 easily, probably a lot higher. To cover this great blemish in the superiority of the astronauts with the right stuff, NASA told us a little fabrication. Their apologists claimed that the eyes need a long time to adjust enough to see the stars in the blackness of space. I, Chihuahua. Pooh and I just went out a while ago to roll up the windows in the Bronco. Stepped right out of a brightly lit room onto the top of the mountain, and we both said, "Wow, look at those stars." Almost simultaneously at the same time. Didn't take us any time at all to adjust to the brightest stars. We could see all the brightest stars that quick. Now, we couldn't see any of the dim stars, but if we'd stayed out there 10 minutes, we would have been able to see most of them. And if we'd have stayed out there another 10 minutes, we would have been able to see everything. That's how quickly the eyes adjust. Long time to adjust to see the stars. That's one of the dumber lies they ever told, because we can stare at a street light and look quickly at a star and see it, ladies and gentlemen. That's the truth. If you don't believe me, if you live anywhere where you can see the stars, but you've got to be able to see the stars first. Okay? If you live in L.A. and there's smog in the air, don't call me and say you couldn't see the stars. I was giving a slide presentation in a large theater. There were about 700 people in this theater. That's how many seats there were. At the end, when I had the question and answer period, a guy way in the back raised his hand, and I pointed him out and said, "Yes, sir," and he stood up and he said, "Mr. Cooper, I don't know what you're trying to pull here. I've been sitting here, I looked at every one of those slides, and I didn't see anything." Most of what I'd shown was so obvious that it was like the nose in your own face. So I asked him, I said, "Sir, do you wear glasses?" He said, "Yes." I said, "Where are they?" He said, "I forgot them. I left them at home." I said, "Sir, the next time you come to a presentation like this and you forget your glasses, would you please come up and sit in the front row?" And everybody just broke out laughing. Because that's the kind of stupid stuff that goes on all the time. This guy couldn't see anything. if he wanted to, he was blaming it on me. So, if you live in L.A. or any place else where there's a lot of smog or there's clouds in the atmosphere, and you go out and look at the street light, and you look up, you don't see anything, please don't write me a letter, because you don't even want to hear what I'm going to write back to you. But if you live somewhere where you can go out, you can look up, you can see stars, then look over the street light so your eyes get that bright light right in them, look up, you'll still be able to see the brightest stars. This is a scam, you see. And you're looking through an atmosphere full of dust and air particles and moisture. Those guys out in space have nothing between them and the star. It's a clear shot. Clear shot, folks. But at this stage of the game, someone in NASA must have been in a total panic. NASA's real goal, to beat the Russians to the dark side of the moon, required men who could certainly see the stars. At least that's what they told us their real goal was. The only thing that NASA felt at this early age, or stage, I should say, in the space game, was that this goal had been jeopardized. Astronauts with star blindness who cannot see the stars would be unable to navigate to the dark side of the moon. In fact, they'd be unable to navigate in space, period. And you'll find out why shortly. Being the first to get to the dark side was vital to American interests, and most people didn't even think of it, for both military and scientific reasons. And these reasons have somehow been almost synonymous since World War II. The military reason was that the first country to get there could build a base hidden from Earth. The scientific reason was that someday we could set up a telescope to study the stars. Of course, a lunar telescope could be almost as effective if it were located on the near side of the moon. What we term a month is actually a lunar day. Either side receives equal hours of day and night, and most people don't know that either. The only advantage to be had was that the bright Earth would never block out a small section of the sky. The downside is that an alternate transmission method would be needed to communicate with Earth. So as soon as possible, NASA tinkered up another tin pot. This time, folks, they bolted it on a bigger rocket. John Glenn soared into space and not only attained orbit, but also, a bit later, won a seat in Congress. Really qualified. Statesman, that man. You look at his voting record. In fact, I'm not going to tell you. I want you to look at his voting record. On all the things that we hold dear, you'll find that this guy ain't playing with a full deck if he calls himself an American. His claim to fame is he sat on the top of a rocket for 5 hours in space, and then fell into the Atlantic Ocean. He reported that he could actually see a few stars, and even some constellations, indicating he was only a little bit star blind. The odds against all three randomly chosen astronauts being star blind to some degree had to be 1,000,000 to 1, at least. And this raised a scientific question. Was star blindness induced by space itself, or by zero gravity, or was there something else at play here? NASA must surely have been all in a dither. However, being the kind of guys they were, the next they sent up a few more astronauts for even longer periods of time. But there was no improvement in the rate of star blindness. Apparently, almost everybody had it. And they also discovered that these poor souls were also planet blind. They couldn't see Jupiter or Venus. On subsequent missions, the various astronauts would report, get this, folks, they couldn't see the stars, but they reported seeing God, flying angels, and UFOs. But the stars, some of them couldn't see the stars at all. Some of them said they saw a few dim and fuzzy things that looked or could have been stars. and not one single one of them ever reported seeing a planet. Now, do you suppose the stars and the planets are really inside the atmosphere of Earth, and once you go up out of the atmosphere, they disappear because you're looking out into space, and what you should really be doing is maybe looking back down at Earth? Well, we know that's not true either, because we've seen pictures of the Earth taken from space. Or at least pictures of the Earth that they say were taken from space. And I believe that those are real pictures of the Earth from space. But I'm still not sure who took them. Once again, folks, American prestige and world leadership was at stake. Oh boy, if the Russians, who reported no such problem, found out that the creme de la creme of American men, those who had the most right stuff, were starblind, and by the power vested in the domino theory, we would be knocked under the ground and stomped flat under the heel of a totalitarian military shoe, as demonstrated by Russian Premier Khrushchev at the United Nations when he beat his shoe on a desk and said they would not have to invade us. We would be destroyed from within. Now, I got to tell you, that man was a prophet, if I ever heard one in my whole life. We may not have liked him, but he was a prophet. God was either talking in his ear, or he knew something we didn't know. Our democratic lifestyle. Oh, that word gets me every time. Would disappear from the face of the earth, blasted away city by city in atomic holocausts. At least that's what was strongly implied at the time about Little Vietnam, and it also seemed to apply itself to this Cold War situation.
Let's go surfing now, everybody's room now, come on, let's go follow with me. Come on, don't worry, let's go surfing now, everybody's room now, come on, let's go follow with me.
Are you one of those people who were listening to Tom Valentine the night that he had the guy on that was trying to tell you that he had perfected a way to turn lead into gold and that he was an alchemist and alchemy was real? I was busting the gut, folks. I was cracking up, laughing so hard I could hardly walk. I went down and got one of my gold coins out and started playing with it. And later I went down to the Circle K and when I took my money out to pay for my purchase, I purposely let the gold coin fall on the counter and roll and clink and make that gold sound. And there were about four people behind me. You should have seen how fast they got to that counter to look at that $20 gold piece. And there was a girl way in the back of the store, and she heard somebody say, "Gold, is that really gold?" She said, "Gold? Wait, don't go away, I want to see it." And she came running up to see that $20 gold piece. That's the magic of money. That's the magic of money. Folks, that gold piece was worth probably $410, I would bet. If I had taken out $1,000 in Federal Reserve notes, not one single person in that store would have been interested or would have showed the slightest curiosity. Nobody would have cared. And that's the truth. But everybody there wished they had that $20 gold piece. If you'd like to have one, call Swiss America Trading, 1-800-289-2646. Tell them William Cooper sent you. Tell them you want a $20 gold piece. And you don't want any argument about it. And they'll arrange for you to get one. But I got to caution you, if you live in Los Angeles, I wouldn't go into a convenience store and clink it on the counter like I did here. You probably wouldn't get out of there alive. These are real people here. You got a problem there, I guarantee you. Real money. You know, you can tell real money. You can tell somebody who has class. If you've got any taste at all, you can recognize art when you see it. Get some real money, folks. Protect your family. Protect your assets. Protect yourself. It's important for your well-being. The stock market is about to hit 5,000. There is no one who can justify this stock market. There's nothing that these companies have done or ever will do that can justify the level that the stock market has reached. And I'm not talking about 5,000. I'm talking about a long time ago. None of these companies are making earnings that justify the price of their stock. Almost exactly the same thing happened way back in 1929. And people were way out on a limb. You see, it was different then. You could buy a lot of stock with a little bit of money. Just a little bit of money. And when it came tumbling down, nobody could meet their margins. They couldn't come up with the rest of the money while the stock was falling. And so they went bankrupt. They lost everything. Today, it's the opposite. You can't buy a lot of stock with a little money, but you're buying an inflated stock with a lot of money. It's exactly the same thing in reverse, ladies and gentlemen. You see, back there, they bought $1,000 worth of stock that was really worth $1,000 for $50, gambling that it would go up and they would make money and sell it and put the money in their pocket. That's when the country was growing. If the banks hadn't withheld money from the people, the crash wouldn't have happened. But now, something else is happening. The stock is artificially inflated. It's not worth what you're paying for it. And you're paying a lot of money for it. And the same thing is going to happen when it comes crashing down. You're going to lose everything. Don't take my word for it. Put your intelligence to work. And instead of letting your emotional belief system buy into the deception, use your intelligence to examine the truth of what's going on in the stock market. We're in for a big fall. And remember, one of the goals of socialism is to eliminate the middle class. The goal has never been to eliminate the rich, and they've never done that. It's to eliminate the middle class. Read Marx. The rich are needed to provide capital for manufacturing. Oh, boy. 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did.
Well, I went and lost her to the great imposter. I stood and watched her fall, couldn't help her at all. Poetry, so sweet, as her eyes at his feet. She thinks she's the one, but he has just begun. All her friends, they just watch her.
Watch her.
For they are the great imposter. Don't she know he's on a string? It's not real, it's just a time. And he's playing the part.
NASA, folks, tested another batch of pilots, but this time they tested them for star blindness before they inducted them into the space program. Their research medical staff, together with an uncounted army of shrinks, devised a surefire test to check them out. The method was straightforward. It consisted in paying local scout leaders to escort the candidates into the mountains for a night of camping out and stargazing. Mano y mano. When they came back from the trip, the scout leaders pronounced them to really have the right stuff. I wonder how much that costs the taxpayers. Those that are taxpayers and enjoy paying those taxes. The new group of astronauts were integrated with the old veterans, and NASA began to send them up two at a time in the Gemini program. Hopes ran high, folks. But still, after 10 more space shots, the best that could be found were a few who could pick out a couple of fuzzy, indistinct stars. Is this incredible or what? It was probably bruited about by the higher echelons of super spooks in the Asp Cavern that star blindness was extremely contagious, like chickenpox or measles. The upside was that those few who could barely see the stars would become navigators, and with luck, we could still get to the dark side of the moon before the Russians. You see, one of the things that makes this all a lie is they had to be able to see the stars to navigate. You didn't know that, did you? Well, they don't want you to know that, because then they'd have to explain why, if they could see the stars to navigate, they couldn't see the stars to photograph them, and if they couldn't see the stars to photograph them, then the astronauts couldn't have possibly seen the stars with their eyes. Because I got to tell you, Hasselblad lenses are better than anybody's eye. Oh boy. It was dangerous, but hey, that's what men with the right stuff do best. They confound us by confronting danger. Further testing, ladies and gentlemen, disclosed that for some undiscoverable reason, every astronaut can see the stars and the planets while they're here on Earth, but the instant they hit space, this was no longer true. The disease apparently occurred only under conditions of zero gravity. Seems like a great cosmic joke that just as man reaches for the stars, he can no longer see them. Obviously, no cure was ever found, because even today, few shuttle astronauts have ever mentioned seeing stars or planets. Oh, the gods of space are capricious and cruel and crazy, aren't they? The New World Order was hanging by a thread. How could the rest of the world be led to one world citizenship by the United States if our men didn't have the right stuff? Probably the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations held its collective breath and ordered an expansion of NASA's program. NASA, being the eternal optimist, readily went along for two reasons. The first was that hope springs eternal in human testes. And secondly, it was a gravy train, a pork barrel, a veritable cornucopia of untraceable and unaccountable funds. Don't think so? Start following the money and see if you can find out where it went. NASA inducted even more astronauts into its ranks, hired thousands of people, and let out billion-dollar contracts to multi-zillion-dollar blue-chip American international corporations. After all, what is money when God, apple pie, the flag, and the American way of life were at stake?
Superman was watching you. Sooner or later, NASA knew that we would get to the dark side of the moon. This was nobility in its highest form. During the Apollo program, folks, they began to regularly send astronauts out in threes. The ground computers handled the outward bound navigation to the moon. Everyone, including the designated navigators, hoped for the best. And this turned out to be okay, because once they orbited the dark side, while not cured, they really could see the stars clearly enough to be able to report their position. Now, isn't that strange? Between the Earth and the moon, even when the sun was directly behind them and they were looking out into the blackness of space with no light in their eyes whatsoever, they couldn't see the stars. Don't you think it's incredible that once they went around to the dark side of the moon, all of a sudden they could see the stars? What principle of physics that we are not aware of is at work here? What's going on? Before my research into this matter, I initially suspected that star blindness was Central Intelligence Agency disinformation for the Russians. Now I don't know what to think. But starting tonight and continuing tomorrow night, I'm going to quote to you what the astronauts have said. And it's going to blow your mind. Only two of the many books written about the subject dealt in any depth with the subject of star blindness beyond reporting that the stars were dim and fuzzy. The first is called Carrying the Fire. Whoa! What a wonderful title. You think the Philosophers of Fire had anything to do with that title? Carrying the Fire. Oh, yes. On top of the obelisk in Dealey Plaza in Dallas, Texas, there is a torch, the eternal flame. Only it's carved in stone. The one placed upon top of Kennedy's grave really burns. Great joke, huh? You see these arrogant... I was going to say something that I shouldn't say on radio. These arrogant elitists are laughing at us constantly. They have a morbid sense of humor. Carrying the Fire, indeed. Written by astronaut Michael Collins, did you know that all of these astronauts were Freemasons? Did you know that all the hierarchy of NASA were Freemasons? Did you know that the head of NASA at the time, the Apollo program, is now the Grand Master of the Council of the 33rd Degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry? In the House of the Temple, only 13 blocks from the White House. You didn't know that, did you? His name is Kleindienst. Good old German name. The other is For All Mankind. Another one of those utopian titles, right out of the mysteries. Well, what we're doing may cause a little pain, and some people may have to suffer and die, but it's in the best interest of all mankind. For All Mankind by Harry Hirt III, who seems to be a very competent researcher. I thought about going to visit the NASA archives in Houston, but I chickened out. I got to figuring that once NASA let a too curious visitor into its vaults, he might not find his way out again. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, I am doing two things. I am reading directly from NASA Mooned America by Renee, and I'm adding my own knowledge and comments to the text of the book. So you're getting a double whammy when I do shows like this. If you'd like to have a copy of NASA Mooned America by Renee, This is an incredible book. It's $30 post-paid. $30 post-paid. Make your check or money order payable to Annie, A-N-N-I-E, and send it to, address the envelope to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420. Sholo, spelled exactly as it sounds, Sho and Lo, Arizona, 85901. That's $30 post-paid. Make check or money order payable to Annie, A-N-N-I-E. Address your envelope to the Intelligence Service, Post Office Box 1420, Sholo, Arizona, 85901. Incredible book. And it's expensive. It's expensive for us to buy. It's expensive for you to buy, but it's well worth it. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, if it had cost me $100, I would have paid $100 for it. The government, folks, in addition to having a very bad safety record concerning people who seem to be a tad critical, are always adding this or that to secret files so that they cannot be viewed for 50-some-odd years. A lot of government critics have complained that the so-called Freedom of Information Act has many capricious frustrations, and I can tell you that's absolutely true. Besides, I didn't want to be accidentally locked in one of those basement record rooms. Somebody sent me an email the other day. Well, let me back up a little bit. Somebody had posted an email letter on the internet wanting to know whether they could get a copy of all the executive orders. And I sent him back a post, told him Title III. I also told him that they're all in the Federal Register. Every one of them must be printed in the Federal Register, except for classified executive orders. And then all he had to do was go to a good library, usually most big city libraries, any university library, any federal depository library, any law library, will have these executive orders. He sent me back and said, well, he didn't get into the big city very much and wondered if he could get them through the Freedom of Information Act. Again, I almost couldn't get up off the floor laughing. Because first he would have had to file a request. It would have taken him weeks to get any answer back. His first request would have been denied on the grounds of up-a-dump-dump-dump. He would have had to file again and make an appeal. And then when that appeal was denied, he might have to sue. And eventually, after a year and a half or 2 years, he might get some of the executive orders when all he had to do was get in his car and go down to the library. It's amazing what people will do to get out of doing just a little bit of work, isn't it? Did I tell you people I used to go to Disneyland when I lived in Southern California? I used to go to Disneyland every once in a while just to sit and watch the people. Watching the people is more fun than any of the rides, than any of that fantasy stuff. It's incredible what they do and what they say. And the children. Well, I have a soft place in my heart for children of all ages and colors and heights and sizes, and I just love children. I can watch them forever. About the backside of the moon, first quote for this section that I'm reading from is taken from Mr. Hertz's book, where he states, the moon is a natural laboratory for practical research. Its dark side is the ideal place for a giant telescope, possibly constructed out of glass blown from lunar sands, that could afford vast new glimpses into deep space astronomy. End quote. And could you imagine the type of facility that would have to be set up to be able to produce glass blown from lunar sands and then grind it into the proper specification so that it could be used in a telescope? And this is exactly what I've been telling you. The dark side is apparently, according to NASA, the only place that star-blind people will ever be able to clearly see the stars. Why is this? Never mind NASA's unconscionable goof with the original optics of the Hubble telescope, or the subsequent multi-million dollar repair job, deep space telescopes may be astigmatic. Did I pronounce that right? I don't think so. Astigmatic. But by definition, they're hardly star-blind, like the early astronauts. The serious side is that Mr. Hurt touts NASA's grandiose plans for Mars because he still believes in NASA. Trying to figure out where I'm at here. Because I need something to go out with. Yeah, I'll do that. Let me punch it up here to number 21 on the old CD rack and read one more paragraph. And then I got other things to do. It's all kind of dumb anyway, folks. These fools talking about the dark side of the moon seem to have forgotten that the moon has no Earth-type fluorescent atmosphere which sends generated light flowing in all directions. Light travels or reflects only in straight lines, and it makes absolutely no difference in space whether the sun is shining or the Earth is shining. A highly directional instrument like a telescope would only have to have a black tube affixed to its end to protect its optics from secondary light pollution. Buzz Aldrin was also quoted by Hurt while riding Apollo 11 on its way to the moon, spoke about spacecraft's induced rotation around its longitudinal axis. And he said, quote, "The only consolation was the magnificence of the visual spectacle that paraded past their portals during every roll, what Aldrin calls an incredible panorama every 2 minutes as the sun, moon, and earth appeared in our windows one at a time," end quote. There was no mention of stars or planets. In fact, his partner Neil Armstrong is also quoted, the sky is black, you know. It's a very dark sky. I could have told them that before they left. Good night, and God bless each and every single one of you. Yeah.